You are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday.
What month is this Friday? March 13th. Ooh.
Friday the
13th.
Colonoscopy Friday.
Colonoscopy Friday.
For Sam.
For Sam, yeah, not for us.
Yeah. That's ages away for us. Okay.
Well, today. Oh, wait, I gotta do the intro.
You gotta do our intro.
It's the three-time award-winning The Majority Report. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And we are broadcasting to you live in the industrial. What was that?
Steps from
the industrial ravaged Gowanus Canal.
In the heartland of America.
It's an extra.
Brooklyn, USA.
Extra, extra, extra casual Friday today.
So casual.
Because we know Sam's not even listening to this show for sure. Because he's currently undergoing a procedure.
Really unpleasant procedure. Which hopefully the drugs will make somewhat pleasant for him.
But we have a great show for you all today.
That's right, because Cliff Schechter, he's not getting a colonoscopy. He's talking to me. And we're going to be talking about...
which is arguably...
somewhat better. Not that much better. We're going to be talking about the Republicans' Iran debacle. More info on... guns, the gun crisis that continues unabated in this country. Cliff has a new push against it. I'm going to tell Cliff, and I'll tell you all, at the risk of some angry IMs, I actually went shooting last weekend. Not hunting, but shooting. Very interesting, very weird experience. But a lot more. Got some new sound from Bill O'Reilly, which actually we'll get to up top. And Matt, what do you got in store for us?
With movies this week.
Oh, really quick. I'm sorry. We are starting a little bit late with Cliff. He's not going to be ready till 12:15.
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, people will wait. Bringing us our movie segment of the week, Alexis Goldstein of Criticize After Dinner. A lot of you might be familiar with her, with the work she's done with Occupy SEC.
Of course.
And she's been great on this show explaining her takedowns of the Wall Street bankers. But now we get to see the movie review side of her.
And I have a hard question for her, which is, why wait till after dinner? I don't get it.
We'll have to find out.
I can criticize during dinner, too. Thank you. All right, folks. The viewers of this show know that I have had a long affinity for talking about Bill O'Reilly and I guess what a liar he is and what a blowhard he is, but also really what has kind of most consistently bothered me about him is his verbiage, his nonsense, his garbage on race. I guess those would be the best ways I could explain it. I mean, you got to give credit where credit is due. He is America's number one race hustler, and he knows what he's doing, and he does it well. And when I came across this clip that he did yesterday in response to the shooting of two police officers in Ferguson, which obviously is horrible, we don't condone violence against anyone. There's no way this will help. Thankfully, they weren't killed or seriously injured, apparently. And it's worth reminding everybody, before we play the sound, we have no idea who did this. The police don't know. Federal investigators don't know. The media certainly doesn't know. But Bill O'Reilly, who was taking a break from lying about his career to get back to his regular schedule of lying about events in the country, took to his program on Fox News to explain who did the shooting in Ferguson and then condemn Method Man. We've been having a lot of sound recently where stupid white pundits attack rappers who have they have less talent than. And this sound fits right in that pattern. Let's listen to Bill O'Reilly's conspiracy about Ferguson, then listen to him respond to Method Man's statements on what's happened to Ferguson.
So less than 1% of residents were protesting last night. Why the low number? Because there was nothing to protest. The city's changing, okay, trying to put the Michael Brown shooting behind it.
Pause
but
it.
Anarchists.
Everybody knows that this is about systemic racism and abuse on a mass scale so glaringly that even the federal government has had to come in, recognize, and condemn it.
The DOJ report came out, Michael. It just came out, what, a few days ago? Things are already changing. Go home, everybody. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here, folks.
Is growing in America. Whatever controversial situations arise, these people show up looking for trouble. And they're not always condemned. Listen to rapper Method Man going unchallenged
One commonality I do have with Bill O'Reilly is that even as a teenager, which I think, or maybe even younger than teenager, when I first discovered Method Man. I've always called him Method Man.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You mean Method Man.
That's what everybody calls him.
SNBC. So according to Mr. Method Man, because the FBI did an honest investigation supervised by Attorney General Eric Holder, the two police officers reaped what they sowed? That kind of colossal ignorance drives violence. And the NBC anchor sits there and says nothing? Good grief. Talking Points does not believe the police shootings last night were racial in any way. Again, they're an anti-American play. And it is the job of the press to expose the haters, not lump them in with legitimate protesters. Right now, that job not being done.
Okay, I don't know what happened to the sound there, but we missed Method Man's comments. But basically what Method Man said was that while that was a horrible thing that happened, which he does not want to see happen at all, in the context of all of the violence and abuse and killing in Ferguson, there are sometimes horrible consequences like the shooting of these police officers. He didn't condone. He didn't support. He didn't in any way suggest that this was the right thing to do. He just observed that things like this could be the consequence of what the DOJ has identified as mass systemic racism and abuse. We have it now. Let's play what Method Man actually said, and then I'll get back to the rest of why Bill O'Reilly is so mind-blowingly off base.
This thing that happened, I guess, in Ferguson just now with the two officers, sad, very sad. I hate to say that that FBI report kind of played into this, and these things shouldn't be happening, but you reap what you sow, in a sense.
Okay, so yeah, controversial statement, I guess, is all he's saying is that, look, when you do certain things, sometimes there are certain reactions. We see this in every part of life. Does this mean we condone or support the action or Method Man does? No, obviously he doesn't. He said it was sad. He said it was horrible. No one was supporting it. Bill O'Reilly immediately distorts what he's saying and then goes into a complete distortion of the report, which is basically like this unbelievable bear hug he's giving the report by pretty much just saying, well, this report came out that detailed everything, and it was just about Michael Brown. He hasn't mentioned once what was in the report, which again was racist emails, was the police basically running as a organized criminal organization preying on the black community to get revenue for the city. Numerous cases of abuse, wrongful arrest, and everything else you can imagine. He's not mentioning any of that. And then, I guess to his credit, instead of his Fox News colleagues and jumping and further hyping up the race issues and the racial distortion even more, he's blaming the shooting on anarchists who are supposedly trying to create a revolution in America, which he's completely pulling out of his ass. I guess at least better a total figment of his imagination than lying about actual historical events like he did when he claimed to have seen nuns murdered in El Salvador. So Bill O'Reilly, once again, lying, failing, flailing, getting paid great money to do it, and I'm sure satisfying his audience and his bosses. We're going to take a brief break and get back with Cliff Schechter.
My man. Speech. First of all, I want to thank my connect, the most important person with all due respect. Thanks to the duffel bag, the brown paper bag, the Nike shoe box for holding all this cash. Okay. Boys in blue who agree before the badge. Okay. The first push who ever made the stash. Okay. The rock boys in the building tonight. Hey. Oh, what a feeling I'm feeling life. Hey. Thanks to the lanes, bad aim. Thanks to a little change, I tore you off the cane. Bullet wounds will stop your buffoonery. Thanks to the pastor rapping at your eulogy. To Little Kim and them, you know the women friend who carry the word cross state for a gentleman. Yeah, thanks to all the hustlers. And most importantly, you, the customer. The rock boys in the building tonight. Hey. Oh, what a feeling I'm feeling life. Hey. You don't even gotta bring your paper out. We the dope boys of the year. Drinks is on the house. The rock boys in the building tonight. Hey. Look at how I'm chilling. I'm killing this. Hey. You don't even gotta bring your purses out. We the dope boys of the year. Drinks is on the house.
We in the house. We in the house. Hey.
Let your hair down, baby. I just hit a score. Pick any place on the planet. Pick the shore. Take what the fall is bigger than figure more. Cause they forgot to account what I did with the fraud. Pick the time. Let's pick apart some stars. Pick a weekend for freaking for figure falls. I figure frauds never hit a lick before. So they don't know the feeling when them things get across. Put your hand out the window, feel a force, feel a posh, hit the frost, ice cold, jewels got no flaws, drop got no top, you on the top floor, pink rosé, think OJ, I get away with murder when I sling, got less steps than Britney, that means it ain't stepped on, dig me, the rock boys in the building tonight, hey. Oh what a feeling I'm feeling life, hey. Bring your paper out. We the dope boys of the year. Drinks is on the house.
We in the house.
The rock boys in the building tonight. Hey. Look at how I'm chilling. I'm killing this ice. Hey. You don't even gotta bring your purses out. We the dope boys of the year. Drinks is on the house.
The
rare Porsches, rare portraits. Rick, you dare come near the fortress. This apple sauce is from the apple orchard. This kind of talk is only reserved for the bosses. Which means I get it from the crown. Which means you get it when I'm around. Black bar mitzvahs, Mozart Tov is a celebration. Naheim, I wish for you 100 years of success, but it's my time. Cheers, toast to crime. Number one D-boy, shame hit the rhyme. The rock boys in the building tonight.
Hey.
Oh, what a feeling I'm feeling life.
Hey.
You don't even gotta bring your paper out. We the dope boys of the year. Drinks is on the house.
The
rock boys in the building tonight.
Hey.
I'm chilling, I'm killing this ice.
Hey.
You don't even gotta bring your purses out. We the dope boys of the year. Drinks is on the house.
We in the house. We in the house.
Hey. The rock boys in the building tonight. Oh, what a feeling I'm feeling life. You don't even gotta bring your paper out. We the dope boys of the year. Drinks is on the house.
We in the house.
The rock boys in the building tonight. Look at how I'm chilling, I'm killing this ice. You don't even gotta bring your purses out. Home. Lukey, baby.
All right, cool. Okay, welcome back, everybody. Sorry about that. Cliff was actually saving an old lady from getting mugged, which is why he's a few minutes late for us. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah. Oh, we have Bill O'Reilly on the show today?
I will. So my friend, no, I would never give Cliff. I'd be like, all right, here's what happened. Here's the deal. Well, I was leaving my apartment in Bed-Stuy. There were about five young men, much younger than me. I'm only 30. They were like 16 bodybuilders. And they were mugging an old lady. And I said, hey, I wouldn't do that if I were you. And they were like, yo, yeah? And I said, yeah. And then...
I
heard my theme music play. And I still made it to work on time. And for some reason, Cliff was late. That would be the Bill O'Reilly version. But
I was saying Cliff comes to save the day, but first we hear his music.
First we hear, well, I was about to get to that.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, LLC.com.
Don't forget the .com. Cliff, how you doing, buddy?
We're doing well. I hate when you mess up my stories, though. I mean, what you need to share with people is yes, I was sharing I was saving an old lady, but I was saving that old lady while I heard one of the friends of Lee Harvey Oswald being shot in the Falklands while I saw nuns being shot right across the water in Guatemala.
While getting assaulted at the L.A. riots.
A guy was raining bricks and stone down on my head. It was a rough day.
Okay, all right.
But when you sign up for what I've signed up for, the kind of change that we need, we are the change that we're waiting for.
So I like the O'Reilly Obama transition. That was very interesting, Cliff. It's like a multiple personality disorder comedy. I dig it.
Yeah. Well, I've always had that problem anyhow, so why not?
Cliff was late getting back from the gun range.
That's right.
Yeah, where he was out
shooting. It's very wet outside, and so some of my shots are going wide left, and because it's in my backyard – did you see that whole thing, by the way, with that person in Florida who had it set up in their yard?
Yeah,
I did.
That's
the world we live in, boys and girls.
That is the world we live in. And actually, we got a lot to get to. We definitely have to talk about this very significant, I think, that this Republican letter on Iran has totally backfired. It's significant that the Iranian foreign minister is giving Republicans lessons on the Constitution. I think there's something, significant about all of that in addition to being amusing. But before we get to that, speaking of recklessness about guns, you know, I've been thinking about you, Cliff, because I actually did go to a shooting range.
When you think of recklessness about guns, you think of me?
I do. Because I think of you as a caped crusader fighting against that. I think of you as like the, you know, like Shalom Man is here to fight reckless gun violence. I think of you as a Jewish superhero fighting gun violence. Nothing wrong with that. But let's get to this. You're involved actually with a new push on gun issues. I think everybody who listens to the show obviously knows that this is an incredibly important issue for you. And one of the reasons that I do think of you in that way is because this isn't a news cycle issue for you. You know, I mean, the way it seems to be is we're in a holding pattern where something pops up. There's some sort of unbelievably horrific event that happens once a year that we just cover. I mean, unbelievably horrific events are happening with guns on a daily basis in this country, sadly.
Right.
But you are in it day in and day out, and you have a new push on it, which involves fighting or die. And, and I know you just wanted to talk about it just briefly, and I wanted to as well, because we should never forget about these weapons of mass destruction that the arms industry is keeping on our streets without accountability. So, take it away, Cliff.
Well put, my friend. Yeah, that is true. And it's something, I mean, even when we're not talking about it, and I think a lot of people know this, there are efforts all over the place. Example being in West Virginia right now, even Joe Manchin, who used to be a guy A-rated with the NRA before he decided that we should, try to stop criminals and terrorists and people with mental illness from getting guns. I know that's very stringent requirements. And so he just came out again against what's going on in his home state in West Virginia, where they are trying to pass They're trying to do, this is their newest push in many states, which is to try to get rid of all permitting and training to be able to carry a concealed weapon. So a couple of states already have this. Arizona, who else? Wyoming. I think Alaska may too, but so they're pushing this all over the place because even better than not having background checks is not having someone have to have a permit and being able to carry a gun almost anywhere. You know, I mean, and that's the other thing they're pushing, right? Bars and kindergarten and whatever. So in any case, these things are going on
right.
in states because this is what they do, just kind of like they've assaulted, you know, the workers' rights in states and they've assaulted women's rights in states. This is another part of the ALEC strategy to do these things. So what I'm a part of is I'm doing work, PR work and strategy work with the Brady campaign to prevent gun violence. And, you know, there's a renewed push now for the Manchin-Toomey bill, the aforementioned one, which is very simply universal background checks. You know, nothing the slightest bit controversial. 90% of people support it in polls. Even you go to conservative rural states, like, for example, Arkansas, you get 83% support. Not something that people are fighting over, just that something that people that are bought off by the NRA are fighting over. And it works. You know, enough studies have been done in states that had them and got rid of them, like Missouri, where the murder rate went up 16% right after they got rid of it. And comparisons between states where there are background checks versus ones where there aren't. I mean, another terrible statistic, which is I think it's 38% that women are more likely to be killed at the hands of a domestic partner in domestic abuse in states where there aren't background checks for guns. I mean, these are real differences. And so we're part of that push to try to shame, you know, we got what one considers a majority in most places. 55 senators supported this in the past. Obviously, it's a much more conservative Senate and House, but this is something they should have to pay for if, you know, if they're going to be crazy and opposed, just common sense things like this. So what we did and is reached out, you know, work with the folks at Funny or Die, which, you know, people may know, the Adam McKay, Will Ferrell kind of crew. Adam McKay is a guy who writes and produces Will Ferrell's most of his really, really funny movies, Anchorman and Talladega Nights and Step Brothers and that kind of stuff. And they put together a video. We decided, you know, after these terrible things happen, we obviously have to be very serious about this because, you know, it really isn't what you call time for joking. But we figured, you know, these people are so crazy on the other side that they're mock-worthy, and sometimes they really just need to be mocked. And now seem to be one of those times. So we're releasing a 50-state scorecard to explain to people what the laws are in each of the states, how they stack up against each other, where the safer laws are, places like where you guys are sitting in New York and California and Massachusetts, and where the crazier laws are, places like Arizona and Mississippi and Utah and Texas. And so we decided to do it in what we thought would be a funny and interesting way, which was to put a video together and have two criminals or people, actors playing criminals, bragging about all the states they go to for their friends, telling them which states are the best places to go if you're a criminal and you want to get a gun.
Right.
You know, and to emphasize that, when we did the 50-state report, we created an interactive website. You can find it at www.crimadvisor.com, as like Crime Advisor, but this is crimadvisor.com, and it actually is a sort of takeoff from TripAdvisor if you've been there.
Yes.
So you go, you click on something, and we've got comments from quote-unquote criminals telling you how awesome that state is. You can get a gun. You don't have to need a permit. You don't need this or that. Or this state sucks. You know, I have to actually go through a background check here. And so, I'm not doing it justice because there's some really funny comments.
But Cliff, just as we sort of circle this part up, first of all, we're going to link obviously to the video on the Majority Report homepage and a link to CrimAdvisor. And I just think again, though, the really important takeaway from this, and every time we touch on guns, though. And another important thing that you bring to the table is it's an issue that's obviously very easy to get disheartened about, but actually the longer term demographics and trends really are in favor of some type of sanity on this issue. And it's something that we really need to keep pushing on, because it's a public health crisis, it's a humanitarian crisis, potentially a security problem. I mean, there's no way in which this it's a woman's rights issue. There's everything you care about is implicated by this, and we can actually do something about it. So we'll definitely link to it, and it's a great project and a great new spin on this. You know, I want to actually, before we get to Iran and the Republican letters and the Iranian response, which was very funny and very instructive, let's go to Oklahoma for a moment, because, you know, you talk about, you know, the push for guns in the states and the push against women's health in the states and the rabid anti-work, anti-middle class agenda that you're seeing with Scott Walker in Wisconsin, but in Illinois and other places across the country. We saw in Oklahoma this last week, you know, a story that's erupted with these, you know, these just obscene racist chants done by some Oklahoma college students at a fraternity, the SAE fraternity. And, you know, it's been an amazing thing to watch. Somehow Morning Joe was able to sort of turn this into blaming rap music, which was both mind-blowingly stupid and also out of date, mind-blowingly stupid. That segment seemed much more fitting for, like, you know, I don't know, 1990. I mean, you might know this better than me, Cliff. I wasn't really, you know, 1950, well, before the invention of the genre of rap music, it might have been more fitting. But just a kind of shockingly stupid thing. And then we talked about Bill Kristol sitting on a panel there talking about, you know, the power of media to create violence in the world and cultural cesspools. I think, you know, Bill Kristol is responsible for more human misery than Waka Flocka Flame could even conceive of personally. But at any rate, this really important additional piece that you raised with me when we were talking about today's show with regards to Oklahoma, I think is also really worth highlighting, which is that, look, this is another state that doesn't want to teach proper American history, and that includes a proper understanding of the history of slavery, the history of Jim Crow, and any other number of just realities of our racial history. So when you're talking about context for this obscene racism, how the hell can we not talk about the assault on history in Oklahoma schools?
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, if there seems like there's a correlation between many of the things that you just said, there is. I mean, it's in these very same states where they are trying to limit what you can talk about, limit, you know, I mean, we saw it recently with you know, Governor Alien Face there in Florida, not allowing people to discuss, you know, global warming or climate change, right, saying that the people in his cabinet couldn't discuss this. They also, by the way, have a law they passed there that's gone back and forth, bounced between the courts and been upheld and rejected, which is to not allow doctors to warn their patients that having a gun in the house makes it more likely you'll get shot. So, you know, these are scientific facts, these two things I just mentioned. So is it just like in Oklahoma, we're talking about historical fact here, slavery, you know, genocide of Native Americans.
Right.
But that's anti-American, because it doesn't say, you know, that we're all exceptional and wonderful. And so they're trying to alter their AP test there, because they don't want this taught. Because the best thing you can do with historical fact, scientific fact, when it doesn't support your crazy ideology, is just ban it, which right. is, of course, what they do in places like, oh, I don't know, Iran, just to pick one out of a hat. And so this is you see this happening across the country right now, and it's in these very same places where they're stopping people from being educated and from learning the actual truth, where, as you pointed out, they are passing these crazy gun laws, or not, lack thereof, they're passing these crazy laws to restrict women's reproductive health and other rights, where they're denying climate change science and a variety of other matters. You know, they're attacking workers' rights and then saying they're in favor of the middle class. You know, because reality can't be allowed to intrude. I mean, it's the new communism. You know, they have an ideology, and it doesn't matter what reality comes in. I mean, that's the irony of all of this, right, which is between their religious nuts and their corporate nuts, they're no different than the radical Muslims they hate, and the communists they supposedly hate. And so just one last thing, you know, you've also got a law was just proposed. I mean, this is just insanity. Also in Kansas, which is another state that has been the leader in assaulting women's rights, for example, where prosecutors can prosecute somebody if through books materials that are sexually, you know, to them, which is, I guess, explaining that, you know, that there's that their whole theory on the HPV, right, that sex exists, exactly. Yeah. The HPV vaccine is not causing people to get autism or, you know, the bubonic plague or whatever it is they're claiming today. So, you know, if you give somebody a book where there's one sex scene, I mean, this is like out of like the town in Footloose, man.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that's what we're getting here, right? When do they do the build the big bonfire and throw Slaughterhouse Five in there and everything else? We're living through this, and this is. I mean, there was a time you talk about the '90s, and you make your nice little fun joke there, Michael, which by the way is ageism, but I'll let you get away with that.
I'm sticking with ageism. Don't you know you can take away a lot of isms, but
okay.
Just
go reach puberty, Michael. Then we'll talk. Uh-huh. In any case, just having fun with you. No, but in all seriousness, I mean,
it's kind of funny.
The '90s when everything was happy. Right. I don't know if you remember those times, but times were good. There was prosperity. We were moving forward socially. We're moving forward. You know, I mean, I'm not saying everything was perfect, but there was, you know, there was peace, right? And when you think of everything that was unleashed by the combination of the Bush presidency, the nuts that were elected to Congress in 94, 9/11, and whatever, to think where we are today, where we're sitting here, where the Republicans have taken over so many states, they've taken over both, you know, taken over our entire legislative branch and our judicial branch in Washington. And we're sitting here and watching sort of the slow motion rolling back of common sense and science. I mean, it's worse than just specific issues.
I think that's really important to look at systemically. And I just would add two quick things before we pivot over to this Iran debacle, which is also a manifestation
of
the same thing. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. But, you know, the two things I would mention first in terms of this kind of unraveling I would be, you know, careful about idealizing the '90s, and I was, you know, I mean, I was a lot, you know, I was like a, you know, a teenager at parts of it, and a kid in other parts of it. So I wouldn't know fully, but I would say for me, my sort of formative experience, and I wasn't, you know, I was definitely still a teenager. I don't remember exactly how old I was, but I was, you know, I was pretty politically oriented and fascinated by the world and reading and thinking about this stuff. But there was something about watching the Supreme Court give the election to George Bush that for me, in terms of my own, you know, my own formative experience, and I'm sure everybody experienced it in a different way, but there was just something about that was like, oh.
Because if you believed in this country, kind of like what happened with Watergate, if you believe in this country and suddenly all what you believed in, you know, that what you were taught in school, which is that, you know, that honesty and truth wins out and the person with the most votes becomes president. And when you saw the length that this very – and, you know, it's funny you brought up the unraveling because wasn't that the great unraveling in the name of Paul Krugman's book?
Right.
And I think he was one of the first people to kind of to come straight out and say this is – you know, we're dealing with a radical anti-democratic force. This isn't – I mean, we can call it conservatism for lack of a better word. It's not – I mean, conservatism right there in the word is conservative.
Yeah, it's really
conservative
not.
Conservative about protecting traditions and
right.
about slow change,
right.
not going through quick – these
this
are
is not
radical.
What we're dealing with.
These are people that want to go back 50 or 100 or 150 years. They, you know, with nullification, the stuff they're doing most recently, where you literally have a state legislator in Texas wanting to propose a bill just saying, you know, if all the federal courts pass forced gay marriage on us, we literally just don't have to listen. I mean, that's the stuff of the 1830s. You know,
yes.
I mean, you know, I mean, we're now at a point where they want to go back 200 years. It's like they're upping the ante. Before we know it, it'll be, hey, Dark Ages, anybody? You know, Genghis Khan? Do I hear that?
Well, he was Asian.
They won't like him because he's Asian, but
right.
they probably admire his work. his body of work, I'm sure, to them is very admirable. you know, let me be very clear, I guess, and quickly. I'm not idolizing the '90s. What I'm saying is, you know, you're on about a 10-year path or so, you know, if you want to know in terms of age behind me. I was a kid in the 80s.
Right.
And so I don't remember the 80s perfectly well. I was somewhat interested in politics, but I don't, you know, I was too young to sort of really be into it. But what I can tell you is, you know, I read history books.
Sure.
I look back. And what I do know, of course, is that the Reagan years were quite terrible for a whole lot of people.
Absolutely.
Now, since the 2000s, I also know that we have been, as like you said, once that election was stolen. I don't know if it was if impeachment was what it was first, or that election stolen, or 9/11. All those things happening one after the other, you know, that were shattering it when you grew up sort of having a belief in this country and that the good wins out, and you're watching that. I guess what I'm saying to you is that the 90s, when you look at those other decades, the past two and the one before it, and I haven't been alive for any other ones, or old enough to understand any other ones, that the 90s seems wonderful compared to those. I'm not,
yeah, I know. I know. And point very well. And I think it's obviously a radically different thing to have a critique and a lot of problems with any number of things and see problems in a time, though, where, you know, there are – it's a roughly positive situation in many ways. And I think obviously the 90s were that, certainly relative to this era and obviously relative to the 80s as well. But let's get to this Iran letter. I think, you know, I think it's instructive in so many ways, because even when you said, you know, drawing these comparisons between, you know, some of the kind of really rabid fringes in America and some of the real radicalism in a place like Iran, I got to tell you another kind of fascinating thing about this for me, especially as someone who's, you know, pretty kind of anchored in the international stuff and has some familiarity with places like Iran. The other fascinating symmetry is that, you know, guys like Zarif and people in the Iranian leadership who really are realists, and, you know, you might disagree with any number of things they say, but they're realists, they're very rational players. They have a
lot
more.
Does Zarif have a PhD or something in international? I mean, he's very well educated.
The Rouhani government has more American PhDs and Western PhDs in it than the Obama administration. That's an interesting fun fact about that government. But
more high school diplomas than the Republican Party.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, well, we oh. Banning, huh? Well, that's a whole other thing to ban. No, but I think it's a very interesting thing. And what this letter revealed with these 47 Republican senators really trying to, I mean, first they had Netanyahu try to basically have a foreign head of state come and hijack American foreign policy. These people all would have had aneurysms if Democrats invited Chirac to address Congress. They all would have lost their minds. I mean, they literally would have set the building on fire.
They would have charged them with treason. I'm quite sure.
There's no doubt.
They would have had them at Guantanamo.
There's no doubt. So I think the two points here that I want to raise that I think are just interesting takeaways from this are that in the domestic American sense, even as on the state level and even with this new Congress, we see this rabid, insane push. There are other areas, and now we're seeing it in foreign policy, where this glib, reflexive far-rightism just isn't working in the same way. You know, it's like all of a sudden what happened with marriage equality, bash gay people and Democrats run scared on it. That's a winning issue. A couple years ago, do a whole horror story about Iran and exaggerate the capacity and say we can't have a deal. That's a winning issue. Well, you know, all of a sudden, actually we can have a deal with them, and people see that. And people also recognize within Iran, if you have any interest in how that government works, they have their hardliners that don't want a deal. They have their rationalists that have been wanting a deal for longer than, you know, even Democratic administrations have been serious about having a deal. So we're learning something new about international affairs, and then we're seeing another trope of the right get kind of laid bare. And you know, we're going to wrap up in a few minutes, but I want your thoughts on those two happenings, because I think that they're very important, and I think they're connected to have a more sophisticated understanding of the world and our interests as actually practically expressed in them, and then the way in which these tropes on the right, whether on social issues or foreign policy or taxes, I think they're actually slowly dying on the vine.
Well, demographic change is leading to the fact that they're able to reach fewer and fewer people through their various puke funnels than they were able to in the past. I mean, you know, the pipeline of Limbaugh, Fox News, NRA emails, National Right to Life scare tactics, the Chamber of Commerce. Younger people have much more access to various channels. And the truth is that, you know, I mean, Air America may have been managed much like the Iraq War.
That's what it sounds like from hearing Sam talk about it. It's like, wow.
But think of this show and the thousand flowers that bloomed from that. All the different people that were involved in some way that are now out there doing great radio on the left or TV. And MSNBC, don't get me started on critique. mistakes there. But there are some great voices on there that now reach people, and many others, and obviously the online media. So while it's irony as well, I was talking about the 90s as something that, you know, in some ways, you know, was great, it was also while the right was sort of had this enormous advantage, was building up. They had Fox News go online on air in 96, and they had Drudge, and there was no way to respond. And so, you know, the left was doing a lot of catch-up, and that's part of it. Part of it's a demographic change. With Twitter and Facebook and all the different ways that you have access now to news going on somewhere else, or to where people can share information with you in a way so these guys can't just sort of, you know, pipeline what gets to you,
right,
in the way that they used to. And I think that, you know, and I think some of this stuff just wears out its welcome at some point, where it's just like, are you doing this? Even, you know, people have been manipulated before in Iraq or whatever. I mean, it's a new demon, you know, on the other side every 10 years, right? Who is it now? They're always looking for somebody, because that's what unites the various wings of the Republican Party. The last time they all got along really well is when they had communism on the other side. So if it can either be, you know, those Islamic people, or it can be Putin, or it can be whatever the hell it is, you know, as long as they've got some common enemy, they feel like they can, you know, unite these various factions. And I think even, look, the mainstream media, because they're being pushed by the left in a way they weren't in the past, they were only being pushed by the right, I think in some ways is forced to respond to this, and respond in a way. I mean, the New York Daily News obviously called these guys traitors.
That was mind-blowing.
Which, remember, people forget, the New York Daily News is run by Mort Zuckerberg, is, you know, a guy that was going to run potentially for the U.S. Senate from New York as a Republican.
He's right.
He used to be a Democrat, but sort of a moderate-ish. And the New York Daily News endorsed Romney in 12. It's not a liberal paper.
Right.
You could call it moderate if you want to. But on top of that, the Wall Street Journal, I mean, and then local newspapers. I mean, you can see it here. The Cincinnati Inquirer here in Cincinnati is very conservative, and they love themselves some Rob Portman. They ripped into him the other day, saying, you know, that they like him usually because of his maturity. I'd argue with them on that, but okay.
Me too.
And that how could he sign this? And I think that's happened in a lot of –
they totally missed the boat on it. They just assumed – we can send this reckless, irresponsible, stupid, constitutionally questionable letter, and all we'll get from it is some good fundraising and some praise on the morning shows for being tough. And it's blowing up in their faces. And I think that really is – you know, I'm more optimistic in the context of this show than other people, but I'm not the most optimistic dude in the world. But to me, that is a big shift, and it's a product too. Going back to the beginning of our conversation, as we wrap up, you mentioned empiricism. There's an empiricism to this too. You can't just say that about, you know, the state of Iran's nuclear program, because that's not true, and we know it from American and Israeli intelligence. It's wrong. We don't know the nature of it. It's ambiguous. That's why we're negotiating. And you can't just keep reasserting nonsense. And I think that there is just something different about that. And I take some encouragement from that. And I take encouragement.
I think it
from,
also helps. Yeah. I'll say quickly that some of the far right people that used to be in the mainstream media have been figured out.
Definitely,
they've all had to run and hide at Fox, from Lou Dobbs
to
Tucker Carlson, to people that, you know, to Judy Miller, and people that used to be, you know, far in other places where they could affect thought, have now all gathered in the sewer that is Fox News. So that's kind of nice too.
That's exactly right. And let's just chase them off to WorldNet Daily, and we will succeed. Cliff, I also take encouragement from talking to you, buddy, and I hope you and I can catch up sometime soon. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you, Cliff.
All right, folks, what's on the agenda now? We're going to switch.
Yeah.
You're going to talk to Alexis Goldstein, and then will switch back and forth, and we'll take some IMs. The IMs are already open if you want to start hitting us up, folks, which some of you already have done. And then we're going to take calls. All right, we will be right back.
Just like the Virgin Queen, we've
to the very top. There we go. Yep. All right. We are back. My name is Matt Binder. I am joined by my co-host for the day, Michael Brooks. And joining us now on the phone, she is a co-host of the podcast Criticize After Dinner, which is a podcast that gives a far-left critique to films. And you could listen to it at criticizeafterdinner.com. She's been on this show before as part of Occupy the SEC, and she's when she's not owning Wall Street Bankers, she's criticizing films and television. Alexis Goldstein, how are you doing today? Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's our pleasure. Our pleasure. So, I'd contacted you. I told you, you know, usually this segment, what we do actually is Sam will have someone recommend a Netflix streaming movie, because as Sam has two kids, he doesn't get out to the movies very much, so it has to be a Netflix streaming movie for him to catch. But when we do the show, as we're not shackled by children, we can go out to the movies. We can take the time to watch and keep up with TV series. So the floor is open. Anything you'd like, movie that's in the theater, streaming film, something that's on television, streaming TV show, give us something good.
Well, I would love to talk about Better Call Saul. I don't know if I'm the only one that's watching that show, but that is the Breaking Bad sort of prequel, I guess, would be the best way to describe it. It's a spinoff about the crazy lawyer Saul, and it's sort of like a backstory about how did he get to be the character that we knew in Breaking Bad. But it also does, I think, a really good job of kind of like giving a little peek into what the world of like being a public defender is like. You know, the beginning of the show, and I don't think this really spoils anything, goes through this sort of like really ordinary day in the life of this public defender, and how he's like in the bathroom trying to beg a prosecutor to give his client a break, and oh, he's a first-time offender, and just sort of like the monotony of work. Like, it's almost not even about public defendants. It's about like, oh my God, I get a coffee every day and from this terrible coffee machine that I pay 50 cents. And, you know, it's just about like the daily slog. And then, of course, there's all the stuff that I don't know if you all are familiar with Breaking Bad, the kind of delightful like plot twists and surprises that you would expect from the creators of that show, too. But it's still pretty early on, but I'm really enjoying it.
Now, I everyone's going to get mad at me now, but I haven't seen Breaking Bad except for like a few episodes. It's my fault. I love the few episodes I saw. I just never got around to watching it. Do you need to have watched Breaking Bad to enjoy Better Call Saul?
Not at all. In fact, my girlfriend tried to watch Breaking Bad and found it too gross, but has been loving Better Call Saul. So I think, you know, if you were turned off by how gross Breaking Bad was, which isn't to say there aren't gross things that happen in Better Call Saul too, but I think it's toned down slightly somewhat, at least right now. But no, you absolutely don't. I think there's little like Easter eggs and goodies for people that did see Breaking Bad, right? Like there are characters that you will be familiar with and you might be excited to learn more about them, but you don't need to have seen it to understand it at all. Mm-hmm. With, I guess, the exception of the very first episode, there's like a weird black and white scene and you're not quite sure what you're looking at. And Breaking Bad viewers will know that you're looking at someone from that show, but it's pretty quick and then it's over and nothing else really requires prior knowledge.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have a problem with the gore and everything. My favorite show on TV right now it's probably the only show I make sure to catch every week without fail is The Walking Dead. So, yeah. So do you watch The Walking Dead?
You know, I don't. I've never even seen it because I actually don't like gore in spite of having gotten through Breaking Bad.
but you did like Breaking Bad.
I did, and I did. I've seen, what is it, The Talking Dead? Like the talk show.
Wait, you've seen the talk show about The Walking Dead,
so
but not...
I've seen it on Marc Maron's IFC show.
Oh,
right?
Okay. I remember that episode with Chris Hardwick and him going, oh, okay, I remember that.
Yeah. So I don't know if that counts, but that's the closest I've gotten.
I'd be wrong to not mention that Sam Cedar will be in an episode of The Maron Show upcoming season. So,
can you tell us anything about that or no?
It's going to be on this year, and it's classic Cedar Marin dynamic in terms of just feeling very awkward, I'm sure.
Do they get along or no?
I've been here for almost 4 years now, and I can't quite tell if it's an act or if there's still some sort of little, you know, you know, whether just Sam makes Marin remember the old days, and that's just not good days for Marin. And Sam loves pulling at Marin's strings, just making he just loves it. So I can't quite tell, but they are friends, or at least friendly. And after pushing for it for two seasons, Sam will finally be on this season of Marin for an episode.
Well, that's very exciting.
Yeah. So so what else? You had wanted to also talk about on your show Criticize After Dinner. That's at criticizeafterdinner.com. You give a far left critique to film. So what was like your last film that you covered on there and gave like a real like that I guess that you dedicated some time to critique?
Yeah. So the last film that we covered was Selma, and we did that just to try to get it in time for the Oscars.
Uh-huh.
And my co-host, Chepe, is just one of these people that just – he's really well-read, and he knows all the history. And so I always learn a lot just doing the show with him. But we talked about some of the historical inaccuracies that weren't the ones that white liberals were whining about, like, oh, you treated LBJ unfairly. We talked about the fact that, for example, James Foreman, who was a member of SNCC, who's depicted in the film as this very young guy who's grumpy that, you know, MLK has come in and sort of stepped on his toes, that actually he was older than Dr. King in reality. And he's depicted as this sort of younger guy. And that, you know, Diane Nash, for example, shows up briefly in the film, but she's not depicted as a member of SNCC, and she was a very crucial part of SNCC. And I'm sorry, I'm using the acronym. That's the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, if you are not familiar with it. And so we kind of try, and then we tried to tackle a little bit about some of the white liberal complaining about, oh, but LBJ really did important stuff about civil rights, and push back on that a little bit by talking about how, for example, Fannie Lou Hamer, who was a part of the Mississippi Freedom Party that was challenging the all-white Mississippi delegation to the Democratic National Convention when LBJ was running. This is all prior to the events in Selma. Mm-hmm. She was giving testimony about being a sharecropper and being denied the right to vote. And LBJ thought that her and the Mississippi Freedom Party were going to sort of swing black voters against him. So he had a fake press conference to announce the 9-month anniversary of the death of a governor just to get the TV cameras away from Fannie Lou Hamer. So his record on civil rights is definitely not as good as some people might want to say. And so we talked a little bit about that. So sometimes we talk about history with films like Selma, but then sometimes we talk about more fun stuff like The Hunger Games. And do we think that, you know, does that have a role to play in today's society? How close are we to a world like The Hunger Games, or how far away are we? So I think the next movie we might talk about is Foxcatcher. I don't know if you've seen that, but that was a really bizarre film.
Yeah, I mean, out of all the movies that were getting critical acclaim as the Golden Globes and then the Oscars were approaching, Selma was on the top of my list, and the others really weren't anywhere on my list, to be honest with you. Selma, I really wanted to see Selma. I still haven't gotten a chance to see it, but I will be seeing it. And but Foxcatcher, I heard about a little bit later, and then it went up the ranks on my list. It's about the dynamic between two brothers who are wrestlers or something like that. You know more about it, obviously.
Yeah, so it's about sort of three main characters. John DuPont, who is an heir to the DuPont Chemical Company, who's played by Steve Carell. And then the two brothers that you mentioned, Mark Schultz and Dave Schultz, who are both Olympic gold medal winning wrestlers. And they're played by Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo. And they... basically, it's kind of a story about how rich people think they own everybody in a way. But it's also a story, I think, about mental illness. And I don't know. How do you feel about spoilers? How far should
you know, knowing our listeners, they will be very, very angry. So let's keep away from the spoilers.
So I'll be vague. But basically, both of the brothers ultimately end up having a sort of professional relationship with John DuPont, who wants to help the Olympic wrestling team train. And he's got boatloads of money, and he's got this great gym. But the relationship becomes kind of the boundaries start to get blurred, and it's very clear that he feels very entitled because he's this rich guy paying their salaries and paying for them to train. And I kind of felt I don't know if the movie makers intended this, but I felt like it was kind of a message about bosses, a message about maybe even about capitalism and the way that we feel like we kind of own own our workers if we're bosses, but like play it out to a crazy extreme.
Now, I heard Steve Carell is amazing in this film.
I think
it's his
terrifying.
First.
Oh my God, he's absolutely terrifying. And it's almost like if you just tweaked it like 1 degree to the left or the right, it would be hilarious. And it would be like the Steve Carell you are used to seeing, but it's like just 1 degree in the wrong direction. And it's like terrifying in the best way possible.
Yeah, I gotta see that movie. I'm glad you are also glad that you made sure to really bring it home that it's about Olympic wrestlers, because if it was about pro wrestlers, I guarantee I would have seen the movie about 20 times right now. I'd be able to tell you about all the backstage, the behind the scenes. But no, I definitely want to see this movie though. It sounds amazing, and I think you just sold it with me. I didn't actually know about the whole boss and the guys who were the guy who pays that. I didn't know that whole background about it.
Yeah, and now he's like this classic rich guy who just thinks he can buy everything and tries to. That's my interpretation.
Michael has a question.
That's my experience with Sam, classic rich guy who thinks he's entitled to everything. No. But actually, I had a quick question for you, and tell me if this makes sense or doesn't, obviously. But I was just curious, you're talking about Selma, you're talking about Foxcatcher, and then the aspect of your show that's obviously looking at the political and economic messages in movies. And I'm just wondering, do you find that happens maybe more often than we realize? Like a movie that has a kind of explicitly political agenda, or not agenda, but Selma's a movie that's, involves civil rights. It's a liberal movie. It's a progressive movie. And then there are these problems in it that you could see from a left perspective or whatever. And then on the other hand, maybe a movie like Foxcatcher, which no one's going into really thinking that's particularly political, and there might actually be like some way more, I guess, kind of radical messages in it. Like, do you pick up on that sort of thing a lot doing this?
Well, we do. I think we also sometimes self-select movies that we feel like have more, overarching messages than those that don't, right? Like we talked about the Lego movie, which has a very pro-worker message. We talked about the Hunger Games. We talked about Birdman, which I think is more about like how fame destroys people or the pursuit of it than anything. Mm-hmm. Which, I think you can also look at as a lens through, because like we're all sort of trying to like have a brand these days. And so in a way, we're all trying to do what he was doing in Birdman. So I do think that, and I just think like so much of society, it's gotten so much harder for everybody, and like the income inequality that exists, like I think it's just part of our like national consciousness. So of course it's going to crop up in films, and maybe the directors aren't even aware of it or the screenwriters aren't even aware of it. But I just think it's like you kind of can't ignore the political realities anymore unless you're at the very, 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 very top. And, with many exceptions, I think most of the screenwriters and the directors are maybe the directors, but not so much the screenwriters. They're not quite that high up that they can ignore all of the problems of society. And so I think we're seeing it creep in more and more.
It's interesting because even the audience obviously isn't aware of it. For example, just look at how well American Sniper did last year.
Yeah,
with people assuming they're going to see some war movie and coming out actually taking that they saw some war movie, were like, yeah, kill, 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 kill. And what they really saw was like, it's from what I hear, it's a tragic story about what happened to this guy and all the PTSD he suffered from and how it basically took over his life and he never was able to come around from it.
I haven't seen that film, but I understand there's also a terrible, like, jingoistic, xenophobic angle to it as well. But yes, in addition to the sort of PTSD and the ruining of someone's life, right, as a result of being a soldier.
Let's go to – you also wanted to talk about – and we've been talking about it in the office because Sam watches it. I've seen a few episodes. Again, I fail to continue watching shows. I'm really bad at keeping it going. But a lot of our listeners have been talking about House of Cards.
Mm-hmm.
And our problem in the office with the show is that Frank Underwood is able to just manipulate everyone on that show, and everybody other than Frank Underwood is just a bumbling fool who falls for it each and every time. No one catches on. There's no one who in all of Washington is able to say, wait a minute, this guy, he's been doing some stuff around here lately. We gotta pick up on this.
I have this feeling that creepy guy from South Carolina might not have my best interest at heart. It's just occurring to me, and the way he kind of slinked up to me and spoke to me in that completely like 1930s Southern
Baroque
way.
It's like almost
way.
Like he's able to put like perform like Jedi mind tricks on everybody in that show.
Mm-hmm. Alexis, would you like me to take over your podcast?
That's pretty good.
And then you could say, yes, I would.
I want you to take over my
Absolutely.
Podcast, please.
The steps to power runs through Alexis's podcast, so I will assume it. What is up with that show? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, the best way I can describe House of Cards, and I'm stealing this from someone, and I don't even remember who, so I apologize to whoever you are, but it's basically like it's the most frustrating, least accurate, totally nonsensical, banana show that I've seen every episode of. That I've seen every episode of, right? Oh, and it's like, God. I'll watch an episode and I'll be like, that was ridiculous. I can't believe this. Do you want to watch the next episode? Yes, I do. You know what I mean? So it's like I have this crazy love-hate relationship with it. I have so many problems with it, but I also can't stop watching it.
I stopped watching it, actually. I remember I watched a bunch of episodes in the first season. I was actually enjoying it. And I really enjoyed – I mean, I don't know where they went with it now. Maybe they changed it or something. But I remember that there was that young reporter who I felt was like, you know, she was sort of on the level with him, where she was able to get her way, and they had some sort of weird relationship where like he felt like he needed her and vice versa. So they were able to feed off each other, and there was some sort of power dynamic at play there. And then I think I just stopped watching it, that episode where she just fell for his advances. And that was – it bothered me because I felt like, you know, this was a show where they were going to go where like, you know – He's this powerful guy in Washington, but this reporter's got him. You know, she can't. And that just bothered me, I think. And that's why I think I just stopped watching it. I mean, I don't know if that was if that was dumb of me to not continue watching it because something happens with that. But that really ruined it for me.
I mean, I think it's hard to sort of comment on that without ruining anything. So yeah. I think I'll just sidestep it. But I think they're sort of like three different DC political shows that I've seen. There's House of Cards, there's Veep with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and then there's Alpha House, which is that Amazon show with like John Goodman and other
people.
I've
not seen that one.
Oh my God. Veep and Alpha House are both very funny. And like the basic upshot of those two shows is that everyone in Washington is a totally incompetent like goon, with the exception of like one or two people who do all of the work. And the like upshot of House of Cards is everyone is crazy, conniving, murderous, whatever, and like they're all like battling at each other. And the reality from what I've seen is that like Veep is the truth and Alpha House is the truth.
Oh God, like, that is so
thank
correct.
You. Yes. But can I mean, I've seen Veep, I haven't seen Alpha House, but I'm watching Veep and I'm laughing and I'm like, you know, this is totally what's happening. You know, this is, I can picture this there.
Yeah,
and I
like watch Jonah, that character that's just like a total bubbling fool who worships power and does everything wrong and yet continues to somehow find work. Like that is like the quintessential, I think, DC person. And again, and then there's like one character that does everything. And it's terrible because I don't remember her name and remember Jonah's name, but the chief of staff, like she does everything. I think she's played by Anna Klumsky. And like, there are people like that too, but most people are like Jonah, I think.
I think that's I agree with you 100% on Veep, and 100%. I agree with you on Veep, and it's in my interest. You know, I'll keep diverting myself if I do that. You know, that's the best part of House of Cards to me is that I can use that impression in my day-to-day life to get out of obligations and arguments. But actually, maybe I use that impression in a very Frank Underwood way. But the other question I have for you about House of Cards before we completely get off of that. The other thing that we've sort of heard, I watched the first two seasons. I can't do the third one. But do you think that because it's so like personality driven in a certain way and because in a weird way, like, you know, there's a reason why everybody in DC likes it so much, right? Like,
yeah.
I guess it's kind of flattering of them. I mean, and that the fact that they perceive that as flattering is pretty telling in and of itself. But do you think that that's like that there's a sort of right-wing politics to that show, or should we just say, no, this is just kind of silly and relatively apolitical and bananas?
Well, I'd love to talk about the third season because the third season's gone in this bananas direction.
You can talk. I think that that's broadly known enough. You can talk about that.
Yeah, like, and this is just sort of the politics, not anything about the plot per se. But like, there's this weird. It makes no sense. So there's this argument for this platform that Frank Underwood is making. You are entitled to nothing. you deserve nothing. And he gets on national TV and he says, you are entitled to nothing, which would make sense if this was a Republican, you know, platform, but he's still the Democratic president. But then he wants to do a job guarantee. And it's like, you are entitled to nothing except a government job that you are entitled to. And it just makes no sense. And so it is, I think, very right wing in certain places. There are other characters that are more left wing, but then they like throw these weird, like, I don't know, a job guarantee. I think of that as a left wing idea. I don't think,
excuse me, Alexis,
that is a right wing idea.
This makes this makes perfect sense. Yes, it makes perfect sense. Now, but that, I mean, I
bizarre.
I can't get into the show knowing that it gets worse than what I saw. So I mean, that kills it for me. I think I'll just continue watching The Walking Dead. I'll try some Better Call Saul. I know that there's a Walking Dead spin-off show in the works that's coming this summer. So I've pretty much got my shows all all taken care of. Did you, you know, I just want to bring it up because I've seen this. I just saw this movie last weekend. It's the first time I saw a movie in the movie theaters for a little bit. I saw Chappie. Do you have any interest in seeing Chappie, Alexis?
Chappie? I don't even know what that is. I'm sorry.
It's the movie by the director of District 9 about the robot who is artificial intelligence is so he gets on the same level as humans, and he's able to have a conscious, and he feels consciousness, and he basically develops a personality.
Well, I can't resist a robot movie. Yes. Like, Short Circuit is one of my favorite movies.
Did you
growing
see,
up.
Did, a lot of people are saying it's like Short Circuit meets like District, meets like RoboCop or something.
Well, then I think I have to see it. Yeah. I mean,
it's also getting very bad reviews. It's also getting very bad reviews, though. But I saw it, and I loved it. And did you see District 9?
I didn't, no. See, look, I'm
straightening
out. See,
that's one. Well, I struck out on basically everything you said today, so it's okay. So, no, but that's one you should see because I think that would actually fit very well on your podcast.
Oh, well, that's good. We will definitely do that. What did you like about Chappie?
Chappie? Well, I liked Chappie because I don't know if you know that rap group from South Africa. I don't even know how to say their name because I know I've been saying it wrong forever. D. Antwoord?
Mm-mm.
I'm probably saying their name wrong. Yeah, but they're in the movie, and a lot of people are complaining because they basically play themselves, but as criminal gangsters.
Whoa.
So, like, they're in the movie, they're listening to their own music, but they're not supposed to be musicians in the – it's weird. But I like the movie, and I just wanted to mention it because I was hoping maybe someone saw it, Michael maybe – you maybe, but no, it's okay. No, it was a really good movie.
Really like District 9.
What it's like. Yeah, I mean,
although District 9, you know, actually, Alexis, I think District 9 would be such a great movie for you guys. I mean, it's older at this point, but basically, it makes a point about apartheid using an allegory with aliens, and then the actual black African characters. It's set in South Africa. The actual African characters in the movie, not Afrikaner characters, are like all horrible. So there is this sort of weird irony of that movie. Yeah. But anyways, and also the aliens too. But you should check that out.
I also think a lot of his movies, especially District 9 and Chappie, because they're set in South Africa, I think American audiences have issues with really understanding the culture or just like certain slang and words. That's my complaint that's the complaint I saw from a lot of people who weren't getting it. But it's definitely fun to watch his movies because I think he's a really good director, but also because I think he takes us somewhere where American audiences don't usually watch. I mean, yeah, you could definitely I agree with Michael's criticism of it, but it's definitely fun to watch. And I think District 9 would be perfect for the podcast, your podcast.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's always good to like see an alien movie that isn't just some sort of like weird white savior like complex like Avatar style like movie, you know.
It goes there. It does, unfortunately.
Oh, it does.
No one said anything about escaping the white savior complex. Yeah,
it does go there, unfortunately, but it is such a good movie. Yeah. No, definitely. No, but it was I really like it. I really was a great movie, but also what excites me about it is that, you know, those type of movies don't usually get nominated for a best picture at the Oscars, and that one was nominated when it came out. That excited me, and I hoped we would see some sort of sci-fi, you know, revival, and it didn't happen. Womp womp.
Well, I am a big fan of Peter Jackson, so I don't have a good excuse for not seeing it, because I've seen most of his other films, Heavenly Creatures, Lord of the Rings. So he was the producer on that, so I'll get to it.
For sure. And you, We have like a minute or two left, really quick. So let's go through the what you recommend. I think you got the whole you ran the gamut here. You got us in the movie theater with Foxcatcher.
Yep.
You have us watching our televisions, our basic cable with AMC's Better Call Saul, and then you got us streaming. Veep on HBO. That's HBO, right? That's HBO.
Yep, Veep on
HBO. And if you don't have HBO, you can catch House of Cards on Netflix.
Or you can watch Alpha House on Amazon. Where is my royalties?
That's on Amazon. Oh, my God.
Every platform. I guess not Apple TV. I'll come back next time.
But
Apple TV.
But you can sign into your HBO Go on Apple TV or sign into your Netflix account on Apple TV. And
I
boom.
Feel so dirty.
There
oh
you go.
God.
This podcast sponsored by Bank of America. Do all your fine banking through Alexis Goldstein, criticizeafterdinner.com. Are you doing anything with any? I mean, this is fun and entertaining. I love this stuff. Everyone check out criticizeafterdinner.com. But I feel like I'd be wrong to not say, are you doing anything with any great work that you usually do in terms of Wall Street ownage?
Yes. Well, this is so other98.com. We just had a new campaign. You may not know this, but buried in your bank contract and probably your phone contract is something called a forced arbitration clause, which says you don't get to sue your bank in court if they rip you off. You got to go to a private arbiter that the bank usually chooses, and the deck is stacked against you. So usually the story ends there, and we all say, wah, wah, that sucks. But the consumer agency, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, actually has the power to ban these shady clauses. And so if you check out other98.com, one of the petitions at the top of the page is basically calling on that government agency to ban. We call it the license to steal that's buried in your bank contract. But if folks are interested in that, you can check it out. At other98.com.
Jeez, now I do feel dirty. We just laughing it up about TVs and movies, and then I spend a minute on. So tell us about the important stuff. That's how
banks
are screwing
us.
Everything
is horrible. No, but the good news is there is a government agency that can fix this problem. So it's just a matter of people telling them, please fix it, and raising awareness. So
such a liberal. Typical liberal propaganda. No, it's fine. There's a government agency.
Please
that solved
don't call
everything.
Me a liberal.
It's okay.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. I said that to be provocative. I would never. We know the work that you do. You are no mere liberal. Yeah.
Well,
thanks
right.
so much.
She is no mere liberal. Alexis Goldstein, thank you so much for joining us. It was an absolute blast. We will have to have you on again to talk about the important stuff, as I guess I'm calling it today.
Well, thanks, Matt. Thanks, Mike. It was good to be on. Appreciate
thank you.
It.
Take care. Bloop, bloop. All right. Let's. We're already in the better half. You get a freebie today. Podcastawards.com. Vote for us. Best politics/news podcast. Also vote for Best of the Left in the People's Choice at podcastawards.com. You get to support two great shows. You get to, you know, it's really important we win this. 4 years straight, folks. Let's do this. I will read some IMs. I'll get to one story. And that will be the show for today. Lucifer the Morning Star. Hi, Eminem. Why do you hate the American version of House of Cards? I mean, I have gripes with it as well, but was just interested. P.S. Sam Harris supports torture. I believe we just covered it with Alexis.
And he does.
Jesus was a lefty. It is very suspect that the day after six racists resigned from various public positions, someone shoots a cop in Ferguson despite the fact that 8 months of peaceful protest in which no cops have been attacked. Who would stand to benefit from this? White supremacists and racist cops? Yeah, let's not speculate either yet, though. But yes, I know what you're saying. I understand. But we don't know nothing yet. Lawless. My ass, Method Man statement was controversial. Your ass, Method Man?
Your ass?
You have a method. You have an ass method, man?
Method man.
Newton said it was a 16th century, every action has reaction in opposite direction.
Dude,
yes.
Look, some people are going to take any part of that statement as being controversial. I obviously think that what he said was totally valid, and that was why I did that segment. So, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Godwin, it turns out Tom Cotton was right about Iran. I read it on PolitiFact. Bend Over Jr., my dad, Sam Dover, no pun intended, really, always said a libertarian politician is an oxymoron and the oxy is just there for politeness. The International Herald, did you guys see the story about the Springfield, Illinois mayor giving the key to the city to Cobra Commander? I did not see that. And I'll have to. I'll have to look up that story. Matt Binder's facial hair. Thank you for the – I love this username. Hey, Mr. Sam, what's the name of the lyricless intro song at the beginning of every show? Michael, who does your nails? They're very pretty. What lyricless intro song at the beginning of every show? Lyricless. I'm not sure what you're talking about. Majority Port Zach. Matt, thank you so much for not letting Michael play his stupid reggae music in the breaks. Whoa, shots fired.
All right, first of all, you have terrible musical taste. And secondly, I just went with some Jay-Z today.
Netflix movie recommendation, The Smartest Guys in the Room. It's about the rise and fall of Enron and the incredible fraud committed within its walls. I seen that movie a while ago. It's very good. Mutt1126, hey guys, what was the name of that song you just used on the break? That was right up my alley, the punk band with the girl singer. Oh, the name of the band is War on Women. And they're a hardcore band from Baltimore. It's off their new album, which is self-titled, and I forgot the name of the song. It's the first track on there, though. They are very, very good. They have a really good song on that album called YouTube Comments, which they basically literally took the sexist, misogynistic YouTube comments left on their videos, and they made them the lyrics to a song. Moshi Moshi 167. I have been voting for your show every day on the podcast awards. Put up the 360, Michael. And voting for a different show each day that isn't WTF in the comedy category. Whoa!
Charge.
MRX or MREX, vote and verified. Thank you. The DX Fool forgot to bring this up yesterday. Digby mentioned David Bourne in her list of reasonable Republicans from the Clinton era. Bourne is now the president at OU, who kicked the SAE fraternity off campus. Now, if only his stance could be applied to the treatment of blacks and other minorities by Oklahoma politicians and police. Ilmec, I'm the far from a Clinton cheerleader, but it warmed my heart yesterday when you two super wonks didn't immediately get who Vince Foster was. Nonsense, actually. Does have an expiration date. Huh. Jay Tingle. Dude, you don't have to apologize for not watching a TV series. Well, then I take the apology back. Jay Tingle continues, truly, Chappie is an overlong promo for D-Ant-Word, and I like the idea of D-Ant-Word. Yes, it's if you do not like them, you're not going to like Chappie, that's for sure. The characters in the movie are way overdrawn and one-dimensional. Apparently, the director took criticism of District 9 to heart, and this has virtually no Africans in his movie set in Joburg, as Jay Tingle calls it. As much as I am a fan of Yolandi, I name-checked on your podcast 2 years ago. I am not so keen on how her partner presents his character. His character is awful to watch in the movie. In fact, there is no one to root for in Chappie. Well, Chappie. And what's his name? Dev Patel, I think his name is. His character I like in that movie. I was looking forward to the movie, saw it in IMAX, and I came away very disappointed. Thought Elysium and District 9 were good. I thought Chappie was definitely better than Elysium. I liked Elysium, too. It's just I didn't need Matt Damon in the movie, let's put it that way. How do you have a spinoff of The Walking Dead without it pretty much being The Walking Dead? Apparently, The Walking Dead spinoff is going to take place instead of in Atlanta, Georgia. It's going to take place in Los Angeles. And instead of starting right in the midst of the zombie apocalypse like The Walking Dead the spinoff is going to start at the very beginning of everything. So we can see how people reacted to zombies when it all started. Also, why does no one on the show ever use the word zombie? it's supposed to be because zombies don't exist in pop culture in the world of The Walking Dead. Like, that word zombie is not in the public mind. So they call them walkers, or I think they call them geeks, or all sorts of things, deaders, something like that. So yeah, there's a number of names for them, but zombies is not one of them because that word does not exist in The Walking Dead. Jay Tingle leaves us with Chappie is a dick. I really like Chappie. I really like that character. I thought he was very cool. The International Herald gives us a link to Cobra Commander Key to the City. I have to check that out. Lucifer the Morning Star. Damn, you answered my question, but from a European perspective, this is on House of Cards. A job guarantee, but forget everything else, almost makes sense. Jobs are the quintessential issue for all political parties. Conservatives want jobs officially just as much as Dems. But what has struck me is how many movies and series try to portray immoral people and psychopaths that the viewer identifies with them. Zero Dark Thirty, House of Cards, Breaking Bad, and others. I think this is because American society or government is losing its morals bit by bit. A Square, Eminem jumping in now, but wanted to say in Matt's Bush and Chain's voice, just voted. Oh, it's keep voting, but I could say it in that voice too. Whew. Cedarista and IMers vote early and often for the best politics and news podcast. Have a good weekend. Thank you, A Square.
Charge.
Bonnie23, Better Call Saul is very entertaining. Love it. But Matt, you have to see Breaking Bad. Some of the best TV ever. Yeah, I have a bad habit of starting to watch shows and never finishing them.
That's worth watching.
I've done it with near every show I've ever watched.
I don't like Breaking Bad as much as everybody else seems to like it, but it is a good show. It's worth watching.
Lawless 1984. Michael, you and I are in the same boat. I watched the first two seasons, but I could not watch the third season. Thanks to you.
Well, you are quite welcome, Lawless.
Ben, you guys are missing the point with House of Cards. It's outlandish, unrealistic, because it's supposed to be. It's based more on Shakespearean model of storytelling and dialogue.
Your mom is missing the point.
Hence, all the asides where Underwood directly addresses the audience to enunciate what's going on and his stylized dialogue.
Okay, I understand all that, but they're not even doing that well, okay? I mean, it's just not. And it's totally fine. Veep is a great show, independently of the fact that I do actually think it is fairly realistic. But that's not the reason I think that's part of what makes it a good show. But even a show that's, even if you're creating an alternative world, it has to work within the confines of that world. So, like, as Alexis was saying, everybody in the show is conniving and murderous, but they're also incredibly naive and easy to manipulate. Like, it just isn't it. And even from the Shakespearean,
who is his antagonist on the show? That's what
When I was watching it, it was that rich guy and like the plutocrat character. And then it's like, first of all, he doesn't need to put, like, it's little details, okay? I just have to get this off my chest. All right? So, if you want to do a story arc, what did you say?
I said, oh boy, continue that.
No, if you want to do a story arc where there's illegal money funneled from the Chinese government to fund Frank Underwood, you either have to do a realistic one where you got into campaign finance and you showed how money was hidden and moved through think tanks and moved through PACs and whatever. You could do that. The other path is you should just do an insane corporate Manchurian style, like, you know, $5 billion is going to get fun. But basically it was like the Chinese are going to try to get $25 million, and this rich businessman billionaire helps the Chinese do this. Well, guess what else he could have done? He could write a fucking check for $25 million. Like, the whole melodrama of that was completely nonsensical, even within the rules set up by the show. And then this other thing is like the big project to build a bridge over Long Island, to build a bridge. Like, guys, like, yeah, America's in somewhat bad shape. We still have private equity. There's still, if there was actually, and that's a presidential priority project. I mean, just, there's plenty of crazy movies. There's plenty of crazy shows, but you got to work inside your context. And House of Cards doesn't. That's why it's so annoying.
Ben continues, if the show is realistic, it would suck. If you want realistic Capitol Hill action, they have a channel for that. It's called C-SPAN. Oh!
You really
boom.
Think that
no,
was
I'm just
an
joking.
O?
No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, I thought that was...
Yeah. I mean, you could say that about anything, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to see a war movie, just pay attention to what's going on overseas. Dandy Candy. District 9, apartheid was bad, but not as bad as Nigerians.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. No, I agree. Yeah. And then the aliens.
Oh, sorry, it's Dandy Andy saying that.
And then the aliens, who are the stand-in, like, representing apartheid in that movie, like, they're nice, but they're actually all, like, you know, dirty grunters who eat cat food. I mean, it's a very weird dynamics in that movie.
We're after the time. It's like fucking prawns.
Yeah, it's
fucking prawns.
Yeah, it's a weird movie, man.
Yeah, all of his movies are weird. My main issues with House of Cards is, one, for such Machiavellian characters, they do a lot to sabotage their own ends in favor of petty drama. And two, I feel Underwood was created as a Democrat, only as a counter-narrative to the liberal media visa, as if Netflix was afraid to alienate conservatives by showing how callous they really are. Sorry, liberal media bias, I was about to say. Is there something you're about to tell us about? Also, you all see In the Loop, great satire of the lead-up to Iraq War on Netflix. I've never seen it. It's on Netflix.
Well, it's a great movie, In the Loop, and then that's based off of, I think it was called The Thick of It, which is a British show, which is about really kind of like the Blair government. It's also very funny, and that's the same guy who made Iannucci. It's who made Veep.
Jay Tingle, what is this, the House of Cards podcast? If this show stinks so bad, why dwell on it for weeks? This is just about Michael's Foghorn Leghorn impression, isn't it?
You could be on to something.
You guys apparently love District 9 and Chappie, but no love for Elysium? I liked Elysium. It's definitely the most forgettable of the three, I feel.
I didn't see Chappie.
Matt Damon actually hurts the movie for me.
Why? What's your problem with Matt Damon?
I don't have a problem with Matt Damon actor. Specifically. I think that movie would have been better served with an unknown as the main actor. I mean, that's why District 9, I think, is so great. Could you imagine if that...
I don't think District 9 is so great. But I hear you. You're saying just because he's known.
Yeah. Like, could you imagine if there was a celebrity who was in that main role in District 9? I don't think it would have gotten
any acclaim. I don't know. I think Damon is – I don't think he affects movies like that. But I haven't seen it, so I couldn't comment.
Jimmy Reefer Cake. Hey, what about the new Hillary song in the email? Just sent it again. Oh. Oh.
Pull that.
I can pull it right now. I'll play it right now. Hold on. Put up Sam's computer.
Okay, let's remember, we can actually have a choice.
This song is called Above All That by Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Democrat tick primary. She thought she would be president instead of just the wife of the horny president who acted like a jerk. But in both public and private sectors in real life, you are required to use the email address they give you for work. But Hillary showed everyone she's above all that. She's a fancy pantsu lady. She's a big old fat cat. Her privacy's more important than just the average schmuck. She'll do what she pleases. She don't give a fuck. Please understand, I stand behind the woman's liberation. I'd be happy to see another woman run this nation. And I find it comical to excuse her and blame it on her staff. As if it wasn't her decision, that's quite a laugh. Yes, Hillary showed everyone she's above all that. She's a fancy pantsuit lady. She's a big old fat cat. Her privacy is more important than just the average schmuck. She'll do what she pleases, cause she don't give a fuck. No, sweet, sweet Hillary.
It's playing. Hold on. There we go. I think Jimmy's best work is when he goes folk on us. I think that's his best stuff.
It's the strongest medium. I agree.
Let's see. Back to the IMs. Louis Brandeis. I'm sorry if I'm messing up your name. You guys apparently... Oh, wait, hold on. Speaking of war-based movies and series, do you guys like Band of Brothers and or Saving Private Ryan? I never saw Band of Brothers. I think Saving Private Ryan is a great movie.
I honestly haven't seen either of them, which is crazy, but I will tell you this. The Thin Red Line, which actually came out at around the same time as Saving Private Ryan, is a fantastic war movie.
Yorick, Ripper Street, streaming on Netflix, is an amazing historic crime drama series about the supervising detective dealing with the aftermath of the Jack the Ripper murders. It covers the political and social issues of the time, as well as the early CIS technology. Can't be missed. Neff, to watch the original House of Cards from BBC Thatcher era. Also, as Michael and Cliff were chatting about teen years, the best updated current teen angst, but really good movie, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. I saw that movie. I thought it was all right. It's forgettable. Finally, still in theaters, What Do We Do in the Shadows? Great reviews and 87 Rotten Tomatoes. I've not heard of that movie, What We Do in the Shadows. It's in movie theaters now.
I think that is a comedy from New Zealand about vampires and zombies, if I'm thinking about it. I'm being totally serious with you, yeah.
Well, hold on.
If I'm thinking of the same movie, I heard about that, and I heard it's really good. Guys, everybody, just getting really remedial for a second. I hope everybody in this audience has watched The Sopranos.
I have not.
Because pretty much all of these shows, you're much better off just watching The Sopranos a second time.
Oh, look at that.
I was right.
What We Do in the Shadows, Vampire Housemates.
Ah, what happened?
Try to cope with the complexities of modern life and show a newly turned hipster some of the perks of being undead.
I heard that this is actually surprisingly very funny.
I have to see this.
I've heard it's good.
I've not even heard of it.
Wow. I heard it's good. Look at that.
Thank you.
Look at me. That's shocking that I know about that and you didn't. You know that?
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Wait, who said that? Who gave that one to us? Where did the AM go? It just disappeared. Oh, Neff, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I will have to watch that. Dolink, Alpha House, hilarious, great cast, can't stand Dark House of Cards, already too depressed and furious by real politics. Jay Tingle, guy in District 9 is not unknown in South Africa. Directors often use an unknown actor in a feature role when they want to make it harder for the audience to form an immediate impression of the character. Look at the Australian actors featured in LA Confidential. Yeah, but he is unknown here, is what I'm saying. I mean, it's pretty clear what he's friends with Neil Blanken, I forgot his last name, but the director of District 9, he's friends with him. And, it's clear who he makes his movies for. Neff, Michael is correct. It's fab talking about that movie. Maui Vegan, movie recommendation, Cowspiracy, will change the way you look at environmentalism and the way you look at food. By the way, Bourne is a Dem.
Right. David Bourne is a Democrat, not a Republican.
G Beard 2115, 35 MR votes in for the podcast awards this week so far. Keep voting. Oh, wow. Yes, definitely get your friends and your family to vote for us. For sure. Jay-Z, the best TV ever is The Wire. Breaking Bad doesn't even get a look in, but Breaking Bad isn't a bad show. It's just not super amazeballs as some people like to
pretend.
I
just got to interject.
Is wrong.
Literally could not be more right.
Oh, right?
The Wire is not even like a great TV show. The Wire is just
that,
like...
That about Breaking Bad, though?
No, I don't think Breaking Bad is that amazing.
It continues, though. Band of Brothers is excellent, and yes, The Thin Red Line is great, too.
I haven't seen Band of Brothers, but now I gotta see it because I've never seen such good taste condensed into one IM before. A Thin Red Line, Wire's the best thing ever, and Breaking Bad was decent, but this is a brilliant. This is the smartest person IMing us.
Too Moody Too. I try to tell that other guy that every time I voted in the podcast awards, which has been almost every day, I've had to verify, and the verification emails went to my junk folder until I made it a contact. No one's vote counts until it's verified. Thank you to Moody 2. And yes, remember to verify those votes. Somerville Dude, what do we do in the shadows is the... Oh, wait. Sorry, there's a bunch of items before that. I don't think you should judge House of Cards on how realistic it is.
That's not the only thing that we're judging it on, man. We've explained it.
Oh, wait, he says that this is actually not from the same guy.
Okay.
I sent this before, Ben Similar I Am. So I'm just going to read it, but we've already commented on it.
Don't read it.
It would be boring if it was... No, I'm just kidding. It would be boring if it was realistic. If you were like a modern Greek drama, a hardline Machiavellian power couple who only care about their legacy, I think it's a good story if you can separate it from reality. In season 3, people start wising up about the Underworld's sneakiness, and it becomes harder for them to do what they want. I think it's the best so far. All right. Somerville Dude continues. What do we do in the shadows is the co-creation of Jermaine from the Flight of the Conchords. Ooh. CLJ, I think the screen name is. Is the listener referring to the Clash's version of Pressure Drop at the start of the show? Oh, okay. You mean the intro music. Okay, I thought he meant like the music that played right before we go into the intro. Okay, but yeah, that's Pressure Drop by The Clash. That's the one that is in our intro. While on the subject, any chance of changing the song the show closes with? I'm kind of sick of it. Are you talking about La Poupée or Pilot Light? La Poupée closes out the first half. Pilot Light ends the members show. Bunch of numbers. Someone should create a Netflix series based on the Machiavellian schemes of Texas Congressman Louis Gohmert and his rise to power. What I would like to do is I would like to somehow get Louis Gohmert or a Louis Gohmert lookalike to sort of refilm the intro to Louis. That'd be great. I think that'd be funny. Could you imagine Louis Gohmert strutting around New York, Michael, and Louis playing?
I couldn't picture it, but it would be really funny.
It'd be really funny, I think.
I think you might have to set it in his home district in Texas. True. He could redo the whole thing.
I want to see him bite on a slice of pizza, though.
It might be hard for him.
Stoba, District 9 was good. Elysium is forgettable. Yeah, I totally agree with that. District 9 was great, though. Elysium is forgettable. Band of Brothers is awesome. Mighty Max. Last week you told me I should support Bernie Sanders, who is more likely to run. I think very highly of him and would definitely support him if he runs. But he's a self-proclaimed socialist. There's no way our country would elect a socialist because the right has equated socialism with communism, and our country isn't sophisticated enough to examine how some degree of socialism would really help a majority of our population. Warren, on the other hand, is a capitalist with some socialist ideas who would also give people the satisfaction of casting a vote for the first female presidential candidate, which, in my opinion, is Hillary's biggest asset.
But, dude, she's not going to run.
Well, that, name recognition and wealthy friends.
But she's not going to run.
Warren's not going to run.
That's the issue. Nothing we have said has anything to do.
Bernie will be able to stay in the game long enough to push
issues. Bernie will run, yes. So you should support him. I mean, if Elizabeth Warren ran, I couldn't imagine that I wouldn't support her, but she's not running, so all of this conversation is moot.
Bob FLV. If you want to try a really creepy TV series, try out Bates Motel on A&E. Third season just got started. Borat. Chappie is the name of my dog's penis. You should just see it. Retracts like tube of chapstick. Very waxy. Just ask my wife. Communist Doug. SpongeBob movie rocks, but I have to admit the book was better. I've actually heard good things about the SpongeBob movie. SpongeBob's a good TV show. You know, if you have a kid and you need to watch a show that's family friendly, SpongeBob at least has something there for the adults. It's sort of like a little bit more kid friendly Ren and Stimpy. That's how I look at SpongeBob. Let's get to a story here. We have a few minutes left, and then we will finish up the IMs, and that's it. What should I do here? Both of these are really short. Let's see how long it takes me to do. Maybe we could do both of them. But maybe just one. So, the NYPD is trying to fix its public image after a summer. Oh, wait, we never took calls today. Someone just reminded me.
Do you want to get on the phones and see if we get a call and have that be the last thing?
Damn, we never even called in. I was so distracted by not doing the switch up. All right, Nathan Ray is on the line. 1 second, Nathan. Give me a second. Put up Sam's computer. Oh, put it down a little bit. All right, we'll take Nathan Ray's call right now. Nathan Ray, you're on the line. How you doing, buddy?
All right, hey, how you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're coming in loud and clear, Nathan. What's up?
I'm getting confused. I was watching on YouTube and you slightly delayed.
I hear you.
Right, okay. Hello?
Yeah, we hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Mind what I'm going to say. Last week, I'm coming because you're the two producers of the show, right? Last week, you had two technical problems, which were basically showstoppers. Audio problems. The first one, the microphone which Sam uses out on location, is a USB mic, right?
Hold on. You're breaking up, Nathan Ray. I think we're having more audio technical difficulties.
Can you hear me now? Is that better?
Yeah. I think you're breaking up a little bit, though. Let's try it a little bit more. Continue. Let's see if we can make out what you're saying.
Okay. So the microphone that Sam Cedar uses on location is a USB microphone. That's a chip.
You're breaking up, Nathan. Nathan, could you email this to us? You're really breaking up. I don't know what's going on. Must be a bad connection, all right?
Okay.
Sorry, Nathan. I always like when Nathan Ray calls. It's too bad. He's a great listener. All right, let's get to the story. So the New York Police Department, the NYPD, is trying to fix up their public image. You know, after a summer of police brutality where one man was choked to death, another shot in his hallway by a cop who shouldn't have even been in his hallway. I feel like there's so many on the list that would just take forever. So let's just get to what they're doing to fix this. I mean, Michael, you would think retraining. You would think, you know, at least some sort of meetings, weed out the bad apples, as they like to call them, to say, you know, it's not a system-wide, it's not a problem throughout the police department. It's just a few people who cause these issues.
You would think
they would do that,
if
right?
If you weren't following the issue at all, yeah.
Well, Capitol, New York, has discovered that one way the NYPD is addressing these issues is by editing Wikipedia pages. That's right.
That's awesome.
Computers operating on the NYPD's computer network, you were able to tell because you could see the IP addresses that make edits onto Wikipedia. They're all logged. And then those IP addresses, you could use that. You could input those IP addresses and find out the location they're coming from. And those IP addresses are all from one police plaza. That's the NYPD's headquarters in New York City. And those computers have been used to alter Wikipedia pages containing details of alleged police brutality. The network that the NYPD headquarters uses has edited and attempted to delete Wikipedia entries on several well-known victims of police altercations, including entries for Eric Garner, Sean Bell, and Amadou Diallo. It doesn't end there either. The NYPD IP addresses have also been used to edit entries on stop and frisk, NYPD scandals, and prominent figures in the city's political and police leadership. Now, if you're wondering what sort of edits were made, let's get to a few of them. On two separate occasions, a user using the 1PP, the One Police Plaza Network, edited sections of Wikipedia's New York City Police Department entry. That is the basic entry for the NYPD. The entry that described police misconduct was edited. The user, in June of 2006, deleted over 1,500 characters from the Scandals and Corruption section. Just outright deleted them. Including, and here's the real kicker, including a sentence that claimed at the end of March 2006, that's just a few months before this, NYPD started to make changes to this very article in an attempt to censor scandals and corruption information. So they edited the Wikipedia entry that said they edited the Wikipedia entries. In June of 2008, a user on the 1PP network deleted the entire allegations of police misconduct and civilian complaint review board and other incidents from the NYPD entry. As if there were never any allegations of police misconduct ever in the NYPD history to put on Wikipedia. And then we get to specific cases. In November of 2013, a user on the NYPD 1PP network edited the Wikipedia page for Amadou Diallo. Now, if you recall, he's the unarmed black man who was killed when police mistook his wallet for a gun back in 1999. 41 shots. It was a big, big issue in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's still one of the most horrific cases of NYPD today, if you ask me. The person using the IP address edited two sentences. Made two edits to a sentence about the officer, one of the officers, Kenneth Boss, involved in the shooting. They changed the sentence. Officer Kenneth Boss had been previously involved in an incident where an unarmed man was shot but remained working as a police officer. To Officer Kenneth Boss had been previously involved in an incident when an armed man was shot. So they changed that previous incident from an unarmed man to an armed man, and they completely removed the "but remained working as a police officer" from the entry. You know, gotta make it sound like the officer was right, but the NYPD, just to be safe, maybe you know, they gave the guy the correct the correct punishment, I guess you can say.
Right.
The correct course of action. And they removed him from duty. Clearly, though, that was not the case. On November 2006, the NYPD had killed Sean Bell. This was the man who was... He was at a club with his friends, and they were celebrating... His wedding was the next day. They were celebrating his bachelor party. And him and his friends were shot 50 times. The three men, Sean Bell and his two friends, were completely unarmed. At the time, this started a citywide protest, much like we've seen this past summer and fall and winter, against police brutality. In April 2007, a user on the NYPD network attempted to delete the entry on Sean Bell's shooting completely. They noted in the internal Wikipedia page, articles for deletion. Now, when you make changes to Wikipedia and people and other editors of Wikipedia have an issue with it, you're able to explain in the back end, sort of, you know, like an administration type page, why you made the changes, what your reasoning for that was, why you deleted an entry. Maybe it wasn't notable enough. And the person who oddly enough came from 1PP said that he, speaking of Sean Bell, the man who was shot to death, was in the news for about 2 months, and now no one except Al Sharpton cares anymore. Just unbelievable. Just, the police shoot people every day, they continued, and sometimes with a lot more than 50 bullets. This incident is more news than notable. Unbelievable.
What's that toe thing? A toe? Whatever. I don't care.
But the last example I'll get to, and this is just wow. So the NYPD, after you heard what they're editing, what they've been editing on Wikipedia, surprisingly enough, they've also been edit happy on Wikipedia on the page of the death of Eric Garner. Now, he was the man who was choked to death in Staten Island by police officer Daniel Pantaleo, and there was big protests in this country after the grand jury decided not to indict the officer, even though it was caught on video that Eric Garner had his hands up and he was choked and pulled to the floor. If you're wondering what the NYPD's response to that, it's to make the following edits to Wikipedia. Garner raised both his arms in the air was changed to Garner flailed his arms about as he spoke.
Oh, my God.
Push Garner's face into the sidewalk was changed to push Garner's head down into the sidewalk. You know, we were just laying his head on a pillow.
You know what would make it sound better? It's like versus the face.
Just his head, you know.
Just his head.
It's like we were laying him down like we would put a baby in a crib.
Calm down there, you. You have to lay your head on the sidewalk.
Use of the chokehold has been prohibited, was changed to use of the chokehold is legal but has been prohibited. The sentence, Garner, who was considerably larger than any of the officers, continued to struggle with them, was added to this description of the incident. So they wanted everyone to know that, you know, Garner was a big guy. He was asking for it, you know? And to me, the most absurd edit, instances of the word chokehold were replaced twice. Once to chokehold or headlock. And once to, and here we go, respiratory distress.
Hey, who hasn't been through some respiratory distress?
I wasn't choking the guy. I was just inflicting some respiratory distress, you know?
I will be very clear. Choking, no. Respiratory stress, distress, yes.
It's just, my God.
Guys, come on.
You know, maybe the NYPD retraining was literally like, all right, class, this is how you edit Wikipedia.
For all the real cops out there, and obviously there are many who are saving lives and doing good stuff, at the same time, this is a very systemic problem. And the whole notion that this is just a few bad apples thing, obviously not true.
Excuse me, Michael. I gotta go edit the Wikipedia page for bad apples.
Yeah. I'm gonna go. Excuse me. Do you have like a transcription service on the Majority Report or something that maybe I can get the back end to?
Bunch of numbers. What do you?
I guess if they're editing Wikipedia, they're not killing people.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
Oh man. Okay.
Well put. Bunch of numbers. What do you think about the accusations that The Wire was snubbed by the Emmys because it's focused on black issues and primarily black cast?
I don't know if that's... I would say I doubt things like that are as overt, right? Like, particularly in a place like the Emmys. I don't think you're going to find people sitting down saying, although maybe they could be. I wouldn't dismiss it categorically. But I doubt they're saying, we're not going to vote for The Wire because it's a black show. First of all, because one of the things that was really brilliant about The Wire was that it really was it was everybody in Baltimore who had a stake in it. But I just think that probably at the time, you know, The Wire, it grew in terms of its viewership as it went on. And, you know, the Emmys doesn't go for that type of thing. I mean, The Wire is like a great American novel. Yeah. I mean, it's so much beyond a TV show, you know?
No more pilot light. Wow, I wonder what song they're referencing to. Thin Red Line. Detachable Penis. Great show, fellas. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Detachable Penis. In the Sticks. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix. Funny as hell. Yes, I've heard good things about that show. I gotta watch that. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Charlie, I don't want Warren to run. I want her right where she is for as long as possible. I agree with that. Yes. That's my, yeah. Let her run when she doesn't want to be a senator anymore. Yes. Loki 4191, favorite war movie, Kelly's Heroes, fun and cynical. The Fades is a great 2011 UK show about dead spirits who don't move on and start to eat people to become corporeal again.
Let me say
great
real
show.
Quick,
wow,
too.
That sounds good, The Fades.
Let me say something else really quick about Elizabeth Warren, too. The other thing that you got to consider is that it even for Bernie Sanders, who, I think if we're being realistic, I don't see how he has an actual path to victory. But even if Bernie Sanders ran, there's a big difference between him doing great in a couple of states and having a respectable showing. That will enhance his issues and stature. If he bombs out, that could really hurt him.
Yeah.
So with Elizabeth Warren, first of all, I think it couldn't be clearer she doesn't want to run. Number two, she already is a very good senator. She could be a great senator. And number three, I wouldn't, whatever else you think of Barack Obama, he is a singular political talent. And that's part of the reason he was able to take on Hillary Clinton. So, if Elizabeth Warren ran for president and she did not do well, that would not only diminish her, it would diminish all of the issues she represents. So having her as a real power broker in the Senate and a force to be reckoned with is not a bad thing at all. And it's also what she wants to do.
Lindsey Graham cracker. GTA 5 cop shoots unarmed black man. Claim he was scrolling through with mouse wheel. Police chief was quoted claiming black avatar was a hacksaw and scheduled protests would cause server overload. And Buenora, I am a grown man and the police officer, but no one trained me that choking someone could hurt them. Sorry, I got to do the voice. I'm a grown man and police officer, but no one trained me that choking someone could hurt them, What's a guy to do? He was reaching for his waistband. Jay Tingle. The thin red line was boring, but that isn't a value judgment. The problem is that the movie loses coherence as he goes on, especially when the name movie actors are forced into the story. Boring can work for mood movie, like What's His Name made before The Thin Red Line, but was trying to do much with The Thin Red Line. The movie should have ended after the first battle. I haven't seen it, so I can't... And the final M of the day, and then we'll get to this video really quick, and then that's the show, but we don't want IMs. The DX Fool. The lead actor in the New Zealand vampire movie was recently on Carson Daly. Also on that show, Adam Carolla, which has aired twice in the past 9 days, which is why I voted for Marin in the comedy category. Oh, and sorry about mis-IDing Boren. That's okay. Now we're going to quickly get to this story. And that's the show for today. Vote for the Majority Report at podcastawards.com. And Sam will be back on Monday, and he'll be talking about his colonoscopy, I'm sure.
I will be ill, literally and figuratively. Not going to be here on Monday. Don't want to hear about it.
So we've had this sound for a little bit. And it's just too good not to play because it is possibly one of the most hilarious pieces of sound you will ever hear. And I'm not joking here. I'm not embellishing here. Would you agree, Michael?
I would agree.
So Kent Hovind has sort of become a right-wing folk hero because he has spent nearly the last decade in prison. For refusing to pay federal income taxes on the grounds that all the money he generated by his theme park, Dinosaur Adventureland, which also is given because he runs this park, he's gained the name from the right wingers, Dr. Dino. He hasn't paid his federal income tax because he's claiming that all that money generated by that theme park belonged to God. And his 10-year prison sentence is coming to an end, and he's finding that he's in even more legal troubles from the federal government because he's trying to illegally prevent the government from selling off the properties that they seized from him from the original tax case. If you're catching what I'm saying here, this guy spent 10 years in prison and is still not giving up on the fact that he believes his tax money goes to God, a.k.a. his pockets. We all know that there's not some sort of entity actually taking his tax money. He has it. Jesus. Now, News with Views Christian talk show host Coach Dave Dubenmeyer, has been one of Kent's biggest fans. And Right Wing Watch has been watching news with a view to sort of see what he's been saying about this. And he's been going on and on about this, posting numerous videos covering this. But one had caught our eye here on the Majority Report that we thought was too funny to not play. And Coach Dave Dubenmeyer is claiming that the government is persecuting Hovind simply because he's a Christian. You know, not put aside that the guy runs a dinosaur theme park, which I'm sure generates revenue regardless. You know, there's a market for those sort of theme parks, the Creationist Park. I'm sure people are going there. So he's being persecuted not for being a Christian, not because, you know, he won't pay his taxes. And let's play this sound because it's just too good. Rewind it if you have to. It's my computer, the unlabeled one.
Dr. Ken Hovind is facing a trial for what they called mail fraud. But he's being tried by a jury of his peers. I began to think about that when Dr. Hovind was in trial and I was sitting in there and I was looking at the jury box and viewing the jurors. I thought, wow, is that really a jury of his peers? See, there was a time in America when most of us shared the same set of values. America wasn't as diverse and it wasn't as kind of multicultural, and if I dare say it, kind of messed up the way it is today, that you could put somebody in the jury box and one of your peers was somebody who really, for the most part, was your neighbor. There's that way it was intended to be, somebody who thought like you and acted like you. Folks, we are in a far different world today. And as I was witnessing the selection of the jury and the questions that they were asking the jury, it came to me, maybe they ought to ask the jury this question. Do you believe in evolution? Or do you believe that you were created in the image of God? Because, folks, I think that's a very important issue in this trial of Dr. Dino.
Wait for it.
Wouldn't a jury of Kent Hovind's peers be those who believe the same way that he does?
Oh, it gets worse. Listen, folks.
When Kent Hovind goes on trial and the jury of his peers are a group of people who do not believe like he does, or maybe one of the jurors thinks that anybody who believes in creation is a nut. Does that impact the trial?
Press pause, Michael.
Wouldn't it be germane?
Now, you're about to listen. All that was insane, and we'll get to it. But you're about to hear now one of the most bizarre analogies I have ever heard in my life. A complete twist of what facts actually portray happen to somehow advocate for his view, which is also totally insane. But I'm not sure if what he actually believes is more insane than this bizarre analogy he's using. Let's play it.
That if you put Ken Hovind on trial, that you would have people on the trial who think like he thinks so that they could, in fact, judge the merits of the case rather than their own biases about, you know, creationism or the Bible or Christians or whatever. It would be like putting a drug dealer on trial. And when the drug dealer's on trial, you find somebody on the jury who's totally 100% against any type of drugs and thinks drug dealers should be prosecuted and thrown in jail. That would not be a jury of peers of that drug dealer.
What? I mean, this might be the most bizarre thing I've ever heard in my life. First of all, let's start at the beginning here. I love how he longs for the good old days of America where it wasn't as diverse and everyone thought the same exact thing. The good old days when your neighbor was just a good old white Christian who believed that God just snapped his fingers and poof, they all appeared right there. Just just those good old days. But let's get to the drug dealer analogy. Because, my God, has this guy ever watched a trial in his life? I don't think that child pedophile, I don't think that pedophile is really being judged by a jury of his peers. He's not getting the fair shake here. We got to put some child touchers and abusers on that jury. It's the only fair thing.
It just wouldn't be right.
It just wouldn't be right.
I like this guy. He's like, you know, if they had caught Pablo Escobar and he had gone to trial, would it be fair to have anything other than fellow multi-billionaire Colombian cartel leaders to judge that man? Ironically, one of the most, it's even the more liberal approach to criminal justice issues than me. That's pretty amazing. I like that.
I don't think he meant it that
you
way.
You literally just need to have carbon copies of yourself on your jury.
Listen, we're looking for some drug dealers to get on the jury here. Just please come forward. Any drug dealers in the house, please. Please just come forward. Can any drug dealers come forward, please?
I haven't moved a key in like over 5 years. Then get out of here. You have no sense of the current market reality. You're not this man's peer. We're trying to run a decent jury system here.
Now, Jeffrey Dahmer, you slaughtered young men and ate them. Now, it's only fair that we find some fellow cannibals to put onto the jury.
Found a guy that killed a lot of kids, but he doesn't eat them.
Yeah,
so
there's
a dispute here between the defense and prosecution.
We need to go back to the good old days when America wasn't so diverse and we all ate the young men we killed. Oh my God. Just unbelievable. But Coach David Dubenmeyer, I do appreciate you putting this creationist, Kent Hovind, in the same category as drug dealers, because they're both pushing something that distorts reality.
Ooh. Depends on the drug.
True.
Some drugs elucidate.
True.
Illuminate reality.
And
actually,
people do get addicted to it and sometimes don't pay attention to what's actually in front of them.
I would just recommend it as an addendum.
What they care
because
about.
Because now we're really running late. I would look up, that is hilarious, I would look up Ollie G on YouTube, did a segment probably from like 2005 on religion, and the creationist on that panel is this guy Kent Hovind, and that's all I'll say.
That's him.
Yes.
That's him.
Yeah, that's the same dude. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
He's crazy, isn't he?
I'm saying nothing more. But don't think like over the top crazy. Think like the most uptight man you've ever seen in your life saying the most insane things, and then Ollie G accusing him on a panel that he thinks he's on a real TV show, Ollie G accusing him of not having proper bathroom etiquette. Just watch it. It's very funny.
Dinosaur Adventureland, a young Earth creationist theme park in Florida. Be sure to go, folks. Know that your tax dollars will ascend right to heaven and into the Lord's pockets. All right, folks, we will see you on Monday. Sam will be back. Hope you enjoyed this very special edition of Matt and Mike Friday. And Jay Tingle seems to have gotten under the wire. Damn it. Let me just read this one thing. Wonder what this guy thought about the OJ verdict. He's correct in that our elites exclusively sit in judgment of themselves. The vast majority are never even tried. But he certainly didn't mean that, Jay Tingle. See you. I know you left the floater, says Jay Tingle.
That's what Ali G says to that guy.
Oh, he
does. The whole premise of that conversation.
I actually thought Jay Tingle was talking about his IMs.
Yeah, fair point.
Because he got it under the wall. Okay,
all right, everybody.
See you Monday. Vote in the Podcast Awards, podcastawards.com.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And position where you don't get paid for the rope that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.